Good morning and welcome into the Thursday edition of the Morning Magazine. I'm Ken Birdsong. Thanks for being with us this morning. Well, vacation season is here, and for sportsmen and women, U.S. public lands and waters, which form the heart of our national identity and the soul of our outdoor traditions, are a common destination. And while national monuments are among the most popular, recent attention on their status and uses is creating confusion among hunters and anglers and others who care about protecting their access to these treasured places. And joining us this morning is Brian Seibert, one of these lifelong sportsmen and also executive director of Conservation Lands Foundation, whose mission is to protect and expand the public lands that maintain our outdoor traditions. Brian and the more than 60 community-based organizations the Conservation Lands Foundation works with are fighting to keep these lands open to the public. And, Brian, we'd like to welcome you to the WENG microphones this morning.
Good to be with you.
You know, I tell you what, I didn't know that we were having a problem with our monuments. What's happening?
Well, our monuments are a very, very popular place for people to go, get out and enjoy the outdoors. Again, this is a type of public lands that we have here managed. It can be managed by the Park Service in some cases, managed by the United States Forest Service, or, as the case of many, managed by the Bureau of Land Management. Since the Trump administration has come in, really it was about a year ago, they initiated a review of about 27 national monuments that had been designated over the last 21 years, and looking at whether they wanted to reduce the size of those national monuments, open them up for, in some cases, oil and gas drilling, open pit mining, or greater timber harvest within the boundaries. Of course, we recognize that our public lands are multiple-use lands. There are vast stretches of our national forests, Bureau of Land Management lands that are already open to these uses in terms of oil, gas drilling, open pit mining, timber harvest. But within our national monuments, that those are very much sacred lands, whether that's for hunting and fishing, contain our heritage, whether that is in the traces of pioneers who have moved through those areas, or in the case of many national monuments also serve as sacred sites to Native Americans. So unfortunately, the Trump administration has gone forward with dramatically reducing the size of two very popular national monuments, one being the Grand Staircase Escalante in southeastern Utah, which was designated back in 1996, and then Bears Ears National Monument, which was designated in 2016, cutting Bears Ears in by almost over 80%, I would say, and then reducing the Grand Staircase by half. So significant reductions, and it's pretty much now public record and has been reported on numerous times that the reason for doing this was for expanded oil and gas drilling, uranium mining within these lands. Again, nobody argues that there are places that are appropriate for oil and gas drilling, mining. We live in a modern society. We all get that. But when it comes to our national monuments, these are very special places that are great for hunting, fishing, hiking, camping with your kids, and just reconnecting with our history and our heritage as a nation.
Yeah, now when you say national monuments, are you also including like national parks and things like that as well?
Well, national parks are a little different. National monuments, and particularly the national monuments I'm talking about, are managed by the Bureau of Land Management. It's not a national monument, but it's a similar place in Florida that I'll mention here in just a bit. These are places that are managed by the Bureau of Land Management. They tend to be less restrictive in their use than national parks. That's why you can hunt in them, you can fish in them, and you can also, as many people like, take your dogs with you into them. And so you just don't have the level of restriction that you would in getting out and enjoying them the way you would with a national park. That's why one of the main reasons people love national monuments.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to get off the topic, but I do have another question for you. And what is the difference between a national park and a national forest?
Yeah, good question. So a national park, these are these places that have been managed by the National Park Service. So it's a different agency. And they really have a different mission, which is to protect the natural historic assets found within that park, what is designated either by legislation within that park. Those could be historic sites, those could be natural areas. They tend to be much more restrictive in their use. They're often higher visibility within the public. So you have the national forests, which are really were established to manage timber and protect resources within these forested landscapes. So there's an element there of both timber production found on national forest, and then also an element of conserving what may be water, you know, areas of their watersheds, good for water quality, or other types of outdoor recreation. So it's a difference in designation, difference in how kind of management philosophy behind those agencies. Forest Service, again, is going to be much more aimed at timber harvest, has been in the past, though that's changing as just the needs of the country have changed over time. National parks are really about preservation.
Okay. Now, obviously, from what you've said so far, a lot of these changes appear to be because of economic reasons.
Well, what I would say is that when you look at the economic impact, whether you're talking a national park, national monument, you're talking wilderness area and a national forest, but I'll zero in on national monuments, that the economic value of those monuments remaining as they are is significant. One, you have, which is probably pretty obvious, people want to visit these places, whether they're looking at paleontological treasures, so dinosaur bones, looking at archaeological sites, or just want to get out and hike, camp, hunt, those types of activities. So you've got the tourism component that comes with it, people coming in, visiting these places, spending money in local stores, buying food, all the things that go with when you're traveling and engaging in a local community to see something. So you have that element. The other part of it is you have, especially in the western United States, you have people who want to live near these landscapes. And time again, where you have protected public lands, whether that's a national monument, national park, typically you are attracting people into a community, typically a more rural community who want to live there. They may be retired and want to move there for the quality of life that those lands provide. So they're bringing wealth into that community through their retirement. Or you also have, which has become more and more common over the last 10 years, I would say, with the internet and technology now, there's a number of people out there who can pretty much do their job from anywhere. And so you have more and more people who are wanting to migrate and live in places that have beautiful, accessible public lands and also archaeological and historic elements to that too. They want to get out and enjoy these places, and they want to live next to them. I'm a person like that. I live in Durango, Colorado. One of the main reasons I live here is because I am surrounded by public lands, and I have Canyon of the Ancients, which is a national monument, just over the hill, just kind of down the road. Great place to get out and visit and learn about the Pueblo cultures that inherited that area. So that's the economic element to that. You lose that if you turn those sites into oil and gas fields. Again, nobody's saying there isn't a place appropriate for that, but you really push one use out when you have that type of, and you push all the other uses out and all the other benefits out when you have that kind of an intensive industrial industry operating within or adjacent to these national monuments.
Yeah. Well, and I would think that the influx of more and more people into these monuments and all also kind of creates a problem as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, we want people to get out and enjoy their public lands. You know, we are blessed to live in a country where we have national parks, we have national monuments, we have national forests, we have other types of lands out there that we can enjoy that are open to the public. So that's a real blessing that we have, but also with that comes a responsibility. And
right.
With that responsibility is letting our elected officials know that these landscapes, these parks, these public lands, that they need the funding necessary so that they can be well managed. And that's critically important. You know, one of the big threats out there in terms of just regular use is unfortunately vandalism or people walking off with what could be part of an archaeological site that dates back thousands and thousands of years, and then somebody walks off with the whether it's pottery that may be there, parts of an old Pueblo building, or other things. You know, somebody's or walking off with dinosaur bones. So vandalism and destruction of these sites is a real concern, and part of enjoying them is letting our elected officials know that we want these sites well managed and we want them to remain open to the public, and that does take funding. So letting our members of Congress know we want our national monuments well funded so that they remain great places to get out there and enjoy.
Yeah, make sure that budget isn't touched. Right at the beginning of our conversation, you kind of mentioned the 1906 Antiquities Act, and I've got to ask you, is there a threat to that act now?
Yeah, absolutely. So a little bit on the 1906 Antiquities Act passed by Congress, obviously 1906, signed by President Teddy Roosevelt, has been used by 16 presidents, both Republican and Democrat, 8 Republicans, 8 Democrats, as a history of bipartisan use. And it is threatened right now. There is legislation in the United States Congress that would basically disable the Antiquities Act, really make it impossible to use. And it would be basically an Antiquities Act in name only. It's a piece of legislation carried by Utah Congressman Rob Bishop. Very, very dangerous piece of legislation. The Antiquities Act has, as we've just said, protected places that are part of our heritage as a nation and part of our way of life in terms of connecting with the outdoors. We want that to continue well into the future. I've benefited from that, and other future generations. We've all benefited from that, and we hope that future generations will benefit from that, too. So we want to keep the Antiquities Act intact. It's been a wonderful tool for protecting these very special places, and we need to keep that in the toolbox going into the future.
Right. Now, we were talking about budget a moment ago. What about the impact fees and the fees that people pay to use our public lands? Is that not covering the cost?
Well, one of the things that's unfortunate is that just in, it was earlier in this year, late last year, earlier this year, the Secretary of the Interior, Ryan Zinke, had proposed increasing parks fees, so the fee to get into national parks, dramatically increasing those fees to what could have been very discouraging in terms of many families getting out and using those, enjoying those parks, getting out and using them. So the fees alone don't cover the service of our parks, the maintenance of our parks, the management of our parks. If we were relying on entrance fees only, the costs would be exorbitant. But what we've seen over time is that the amount of money being allocated by Congress to our national parks and public lands continues to decline and decline dramatically. We really need to reverse that.
Why?
Well, I think one is just the overall shift in funding for other things that the country, that the Congress would rather see. Some of it is ideological, that we'd rather not put, this is, the ideology of some members of Congress, that they would rather not put funding towards public resources. There is a philosophy among some of privatization and the way you get to privatization of public resources, such as our national parks, is that you simply don't fund them, or you decrease the amount of funding to where the public becomes dissatisfied with them and hopes to shift their ownership then either to the states, which the states would be quick to sell them off in a budget crisis, or that you ultimately
privatize them. I got to tell you, unfortunately, when I've seen situations like that, whatever was taken over kind of deteriorated.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you end up driving the price up so much, you end up pushing the opportunities out for the average person to get out and enjoy those places.
Brian Seibert is with us this morning. Brian, we've got to take this break, if you'll stay with us, sir. Brian Seibert is Executive Director of Conservation Land Foundation, and we're talking about the monuments and national monuments and in our country here on The Morning Magazine. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us.
The Miller Minute with Dennis Miller.
I want to talk about hucksters. I saw an article about a guy named Jesse Duplantis, who's a minister. Jesse Duplantis Ministries. He's trying to crowdfund a fourth jet from his followers. He wants a Dassault Falcon 7X benchmark 21st century business jet, he says. He can go places without refueling. Duplantis says if Jesus were alive today, he wouldn't be traveling by donkey. Yeah? Well, he wouldn't be crowdfunding with a jackass either, Jesse. If a holy man comes to you without a humble lifestyle, you should really look into it a little further. I'm not saying they're across the board rules, but I would look into it. I think Jesse misinterprets owning four jets to be soaring with the angels. You know, when you asked your flight attendant on your private jet to change out your bottled water for wine, that's not the point. I don't think the big guy's going to be happy, Jesse. You keep this up, I think God is going to report you to HR. And that is The Minute. I'm Dennis Miller.
Message and data rates may apply.
Earning your degree from one of the top business schools in the country might sound impossible to fit into your workload. But what if there were a business degree that furthered your career and gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors, all on your schedule? One that opened doors to some of the most influential CEOs, tech companies, law firms, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. And what if you could earn that degree in as little as 16 months, 100% online? To find out more, text EDGE to 79645. That's EDGE to 79645. Start your online MBA, Information Management, or Business Analytics Master's program from the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University today. Learn more about the W.P. Carey Business Graduate Programs online. Text EDGE to 79645. That's EDGE to 796.
Out on the golf course, there are the obvious hazards. There's the pond, the bunker, the rough, the even rougher.
Yeah, put me down for an eight.
The giant maple. The row of houses out of bounds on the right. The angry flock of geese who surrounded your ball. Even the occasional groundskeeper you had no clue was there. But if you think you found every possible hazard out there, think again. The hazard you missed could actually be a killer. It's the spot on your skin, the one that could be skin cancer. Fact is, if you're a man over 50, you're in a group most likely to develop skin cancer, including melanoma, the kind that kills one person every hour. One in five Americans is likely to develop a form of skin cancer during their lifetime. That's why your best shot is to check for a spot. It's easy. Follow through and check your skin. It could be the save of a lifetime. Go to spotskincancer.org to find out how. A message from the American Academy of Dermatology.
Because we care about our Suncoast, W-E-N-G.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on WENG, and I'm KB, Ken Birdsong. Thanks for being with us this morning. Joining me at the WENG microphones, the Executive Director of the Conservation Land Foundation, Brian Seibert. We're talking about America's national monuments receiving intense focus as part of Monumental May and Monumental June campaign, how America's national monuments are impacting local communities, local economies, values, and traditions. And again, welcome to the WENG microphones, Brian.
Good to be with you.
No, I don't know if I don't think it's considered a monument, but here where we are, we've got a thing that draws a lot of people to our area, and that's a beach.
Absolutely. Our beaches are very, very important areas. Our coastlines, whether along the eastern seaboard, the western seaboard, attract people from all over the country, of course, for people who live near them. Great opportunities for getting out. Our beaches and oceans are as much a part of our natural heritage and our cultural heritage as a nation as, Yosemite National Park or Yellowstone National Park. Oftentimes, our beaches face a lot of different threats. On the eastern seaboard in Florida, there's been a whole proposal pushed by the Secretary of the Interior. The Trump administration is part of their energy dominance agenda, which was to open up intensive oil and gas leasing and ultimately oil and gas drilling offshore.
Right.
Off those beaches. And so, of course, that's been a major concern in Florida with the governor, Rick Scott, pushing back forcefully against the Secretary of the Interior. It appears there may be some concessions for Florida, but that agenda is far from over. and we'll, you know, the final verdict is not complete yet. So where that goes, it's going to be critical that the public continues to voice their opposition if they hope to see our beaches remain the way they are, to the Secretary of the Interior, the governors of those states that are affected by that, such as Florida, as well as the members of Congress. And over in Florida, you've got what is a really special place and something that we care about deeply at the Conservation Lands Foundation, and that is the Jupiter Inlet, which is recognized as an outstanding natural area. It's one of the few places in Florida managed by the Bureau of Land Management. And there's a wonderful Jupiter Inlet. It's known as the Jupiter Inlet Lighthouse and Museum, and it is managed by the Loxahatchee River Historical Society. And it's been known that the Jupiter Inlet has likely been inhabited for 5,000 years. There's, again, a museum there you can go and visit. There's hiking in the area, guided hiking, other outdoor activities, and a great way to connect with that part of Florida, its history, and its natural heritage. So wanted to point that out. Right there on the coast, on the eastern side of Florida, just north of West Palm Beach. So I'd encourage people to check that out online, and if you get a chance to go visit that area, wonderful place, a wonderful group of volunteers who care deeply about that area and who are standing up and being a voice for its continued protection.
Brian, I tell you what, we're certainly fortunate to have people like you and organizations like the Conservation Land Foundation watching over this, because this is going to turn out to be quite a balancing act, isn't it? Making sure that we protect our public lands and our monuments and yet still providing for our citizens and people.
Absolutely. It takes balance, and we as citizens, in order to continue to enjoy these public lands, our national monuments, it requires us to not only get out and enjoy them, get to know them, but also to be a voice for them and let our members of Congress, our governors, all the way up to the President of the United States know that we care deeply about these places and we want them to remain as they are, protected and open for the public to enjoy.
And protect the land, and whatever you carry in, carry it out. Don't leave it there. Don't leave your trash in our public land. That's terrible. How can people get a hold of you, Brian, to get more information?
Best way to get a hold of me is to come check out our website, which is the Conservation, we are the Conservation Lands Foundation, and our website is conservationlands.org. So conservationlands.org, all one word.
All right, very good. Any closing comments you'd like to make?
Yeah, we are just headed into summer. Get out, get to know our public lands, get to know our national monuments, enjoy them, volunteer. There's many opportunities to volunteer to protect and be a steward of these lands. Check that out. Our website is a place you can go to. And then again, let our elected officials know, from your local government, your congressional delegation, again, all the way to the President of the United States, you care about these places, you value them. They're part of our American heritage, and we want them to remain the way they are.
Morning Magazine Executive Producer Kathy Linden. I'm Ken Birdsong. Have a great day.